You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, July 18th, here on Breadbox Media. If you want to check out our full range of contributors, literally from coast to coast, go to breadboxmedia.com and you can read all the bios and the different thematic emphases of all of our different shows. You can also become a friend of the show, and I want to thank Deacon Mike for now being a friend of the Mike Allen Show. You can become a friend of your favorite show with a small monthly cost and get exclusive online access to content that others don't see. So you could check that out at breadboxmedia.com. You can also listen to podcasts of shows that you miss or sections of shows that you miss. Just go to breadboxmedia.com and follow the links, or you can subscribe through iTunes, through Google Play, or through Podbean. Again, check it out at breadboxmedia.com. My question of the day, on this day 40 years ago, back in 1976, this is the first Summer Olympics that I remember watching. They were in Montreal that year. And the star of the show, well, probably a couple stars of the show that year, Bruce Jenner, who won the decathlon from the American point of view. But the world, of course, was wowed by the gymnastic exploits of the young Romanian Nadia Comăneci. Anyway, she was the first on this day 40 years ago, the first gymnast to receive a score of a perfect 10. And I think she received several in that Olympics. I think she was only like 14 years old at the time. You know, you're a great Olympic athlete when you not only show up on a Wheaties box, but you get a song dedicated to you. Nadia's theme. Well, it was also the theme of the soap opera, The Young and the Restless, but I was taking piano lessons at the time, and it was all the rage for piano recitals. I think I even played the song myself. So my question of the day, based on that, is who was your favorite Summer Olympic athlete ever? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, because it usually seems like at just about every Olympics, there's somebody, at least one person who really stands out. Maybe it's a Rulon Gardner, the wrestler. I forget which Olympics that was. Michael Phelps, Carl Lewis, who excelled over several Olympic Games. You may remember Mark Spitz, Bob Beamon, of course, who broke the long jump record there in 1968 there in Mexico City. Maybe somebody like Frank Shorter, American who won the marathon, or a Bibi Bakila. Depends on how far back you go. But who was it? Maybe it was the Dream Team, U.S. basketball back in 1992. Be interested in your thoughts on that. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Of course, you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. I know somebody else already chimed in on Facebook and said that they were going with Michael Phelps. What an incredible Summer Olympic career he's had. And I think he's made the team again. Tom, on the other hand, writes, the Israeli wrestler who bolstered the door in Munich and tried to give his teammates a chance to escape. That's gold medal courage in anybody's book. Truly, I just like the pageantry and the competition and all the events. Some, like Nadia and Bruce, and then you put Caitlin in parentheses, emerge as stars, but it's the Olympic ideal of competition that appeals to me. Excellence rather than the cult of fame or personality. And then Naomi says, Michael Phelps, hands down, love watching him do the fly. So, like I said, 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to call or text, you're welcome to chime in, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I got the opportunity yesterday, saw a little bit before I went to Mass, and then saw the rest when I came back from Mass. As I've told you before, I love to watch golf's majors. And yesterday, a compelling mano-a-mano showdown It's not often that you get that in golf, but it was clearly that yesterday between Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson, who really, since the end of the day on Friday, were pretty much alone at the top, and they're duking it out to win there at Royal Troon, place of great tradition. Actually, Troon had been the last six times the British Open, or as they like to call it there, the Open. The last six times it had been at Royal Troon, it had been won by an American. So Phil had that going for him. What he didn't realize that is fantastic as his round would have been, and the, as was yesterday, Phil Mickelson shooting a 6-under 65. You would think, if you are within a shot of the lead, as he was starting out the day, hanging a 65 on the board in a major championship in a final round would be enough. Well, I guess in any other tournament that didn't have the Swede, Henrik Stenson, who, having never won a major, 40 years old, was pretty hungry. And there's really about two holes there late that gave Stenson the victory and his 63. I think there's only been one other closing round 63 to win a major, and that was Johnny Miller's at Oakmont back in 1973, before I was even watching golf. So Henrik Stenson, whose round included several putts over 20 feet in the last five holes, including a 51-foot knife to the heart there. I think it was on the 15th hole, I believe, to give himself a two-shot lead over Phil Mickelson. So kudos to Phil for showing that at age 46, he's still got some left in the tank. But even more impressive, Henrik Stenson, whose stoic demeanor basically hid the will of an assassin, because he just played unbelievable golf down the stretch to win at the. I love the majors. Only one more to go now this year, unfortunately. The PGA, but we'll see how that plays out. So far, three different winners for all three. Golf, with the demise of Tiger, fairly wide open, you got to say. All right, let's move on to our What Were You Thinking nominees for the day. And let's go dumb or go home, spanning the globe. Being thankful that in these instances, at least, it wasn't us doing something dumb. I hate to keep it. This is like fish in a barrel, I know, shooting fish in a barrel, but back to Pokemon Go players. This actually from Great Britain. Pokemon, so this is not just a U.S. phenomenon. Pokemon Go players, four teenage boys, had to be rescued by fire crews after being stuck 100 feet underground while playing Pokemon Go. Now, I don't have a smartphone, and for that I'm kind of thankful, but this embarrassed group had been the people had been searching for them. They had been playing the smartphone game Pokemon Go, in which people search for digital characters. Damian Bence said the intricate caves have many junctions and cover an area of about 72 square miles. This is where these 16 and 17 year old boys got trapped looking for their Pikachu, I guess. So anyway, that we'll see what the next one is. I think I saw another story where somebody shot at Pokemon Go people who had gathered outside their home. So you could be a litigious situation for whoever came up with this game. The second one is our second What Were You Thinking nominee, comes from Disney World student employee fired after tweeting a break room sign addressing on-site alligators. So this is not an award nomination that's going for the college student who posted the photo. It's whoever put up this poster at Disney World that said this: "Attention Stan's West cast members. If a guest asks if we have gators in the water around Tom Sawyer's Island or any other bodies of water, the correct and appropriate response is, not that we know of, but if we see one, we will call pest management to have it removed. Please do not say we have seen them before. We do not want our guests to be afraid while walking around Frontierland. As a reminder, this is a serious matter. Please do not make jokes with our guests about this." So this was a posted sign, inside, I guess, a staff break room, and an employee who worked there at Magic Kingdom Restaurants was disheartened when she saw the sign, and so she took a photo of it and posted it on social media, whereby she was promptly terminated. But man, I mean, just to refresh your memory here, just a couple of weeks ago, there was a little boy snatched by a gator out of the lagoon and killed. And so the bosses, whoever this manager is, Disney's not claiming any responsibility, saying it was some manager acting on their own who posted this sign. And the employee, of course, alarmed by it and wanted people to know that this is how Disney's dealing with the gator incident. Not good. Not good PR by any means. How about just telling people, yes, there are gators. Be extremely careful. That might be a better mode altogether. Not a good season for Disney. Not a good season for Orlando. We'll come back for the break here in a little bit. I'll give you the winner. The winner involves a Kentucky judge, and it has to do with marriage and refusing to marry people. And you'll see why it is the winner of the What Were You Thinking award, because the person needs a little bit better understanding of a theology of marriage. Again, welcome your calls, 573-4BREAD-4, here on the 40th anniversary of Nadia Comaneci's first 10 that she got as a gymnast in those Montreal Games. Who's your favorite Summer Olympic athlete ever? Lots to choose from there. 573-4BREAD-4, call or text, email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We'll be back. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, July 18th. Don't worry, God's grace and mercy just as new and fresh on a Monday as they are on a Friday or on a Sunday. So praise God for that. Glad to have you here. A question of the day, 40 years exactly since Nadia Comaneci's unprecedented 10 gymnastics score. She had several of those in the Montreal Olympics. I'm asking the question, who's your favorite summer Olympian of all time? We'll leave Winter Olympics for another day, another year. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to call or text. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or respond via Facebook or on Twitter. Let's get back to our What Were You Thinking Awards. We gave out our two nominees, one involving Pokemon Go, another Disney World manager who decided denial about the alligator situation is the way to go. So how about a winner of our What Were You Thinking award as we once again say go dumb or go home? I'm always glad when we can share one of these that's from my home state, the state where we broadcast from, the lovely state of Kentucky. A county judge in Kentucky invoking conscience in his refusal to marry someone. Of course, we had the Kim Davis situation that was fraught with such controversy. The county clerk refused to issue marriage licenses in the new definition of marriage that has prevailed in the civil sphere. But now we have a Kentucky judge refusing to marry, guess what? Atheists. This from a blog, actually, Progressive Secular Humanist blog on the Patheos channel. It says, in an egregious violation of the U.S. Constitution, Trigg County Judge Hollis Alexander refused to marry a couple because they were atheists requesting a secular ceremony. Judge Alexander refused to marry Mandy Heath and her fiancé because they are both non-religious, and they didn't want any mention of God in their secular marriage ceremony. When she went to file the necessary paperwork at the local courthouse on the day before the wedding, Judge Alexander explained he would not perform the legal ceremony because of his sincerely held religious beliefs. In attempting to justify why he was refusing to perform his legal duty and honor the request for a simple secular wedding, Judge Alexander declared, "I will be unable to perform your wedding ceremony. I include God in my ceremonies, and I won't do one without." Now, let's just say on a couple why this is dumb on a couple of reasons from this particular judge. One is, Judge Alexander, you're going to ruin it for everybody else who's seeking legitimate religious freedom, right? To invoke conscience in a situation like this is not doing the rest of us any favors who sincerely have violations of our religious conscience, because certainly doing a secular wedding ceremony, you in a secular position as a judge, it's not a violation of your conscience. How can it be a religious threat? That's the second. And primarily because, number two, and perhaps this is where we need a better theological understanding of marriage. Marriage, and this is why a Catholic judge for sure should not have this problem performing a wedding, a civil marriage between two atheists, because marriage is not just a Catholic thing. Marriage is not just a Christian thing. Marriage is not just a religious thing. And this is firmly grounded in Catholic thought and understanding, is that marriage predates the church. Marriage predates Israel. So marriage predates religion per se. Marriage is, yes, it is a divine institution because God has created all things, but it is a human institution written into our very nature as man and woman from the very beginning. In other words, two atheists can have a good and natural marriage. Now, here's, of course, we Catholics believe that among the baptized, Christ has taken marriage and he has elevated it, in many ways restored it to its original intent, but elevated it as well to a source and a sign of grace. But the Catholic Church begins with the presumption, by the way, that every marriage is a valid one unless shown otherwise. And two atheists, neither of whom are bound by the Catholic, if they're not baptized Catholic, then they're not bound to be married in a Catholic church or before a priest or even to invoke God in the ceremony. Now, the marriage they have would not be a sacramental marriage, but it would be a valid marriage, and it would be a good and natural one. So, Trigg County Judge Hollis Alexander, I implore you, do the wedding. You're a judge. They're two atheists. They can have a valid, natural bond of marriage. And this is where a lot of this maybe surprises people about Catholic teaching. And this is where it's one of those cases where people need to make up their mind about the Catholic Church. Either the Catholic Church is too paternal or maternal, let's say, treating people like children, or the Catholic Church is too entrusting of human nature. Like, for example, let's say that one of the things that's oftentimes surprising is, let's say you have a Catholic who is in a civil marriage, but not a valid marriage, with an unbaptized person or a non-Catholic. Or let's say this. We've got someone who is raised Catholic. No, I'm sorry. I'm getting confused here. Let's say you got two people, all right? And they're wanting to enter, one of them is wanting to enter into communion in the Catholic Church. And the person that they're married to has a prior marriage, right? So that because of the Catholic belief in the indissolubility of marriage, that Catholic who's seeking, or that person who's seeking to enter into the Catholic Church, is in a marriage that would not be a valid one, simply because that other person has a prior spouse who's still living. And in that situation, the non-Catholic, the one who does not want to enter the Church, who has no Catholic connection, still must seek a declaration of nullity from that first marriage. And oftentimes the question is asked, well, why? Why would the non-Catholic, I mean, aren't only marriages that happen in the Catholic Church valid marriages? And of course, the Catholic Church would say, no, the Catholic Church views every marriage as a valid one, unless given some reason to believe otherwise. So two atheists standing on a riverbank, two Baptists at a vineyard, those marriages are considered to be valid ones. The Church treats us like grown-ups and respects our own particular faith tradition or lack thereof, and always begins with that presumption. So anyway, Judge Hollis Alexander risks ruining it, I'm afraid, for the rest of us. So go ahead and marry the atheists, and they'll have a good and valid natural marriage. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you've got a comment on that. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Let's look at a few things that happened in history on this day over the ages. Monday, well, not always a Monday, of course, but July 18th. Happy birthday to Ricky Skaggs, American singer, songwriter, mandolin player, and producer. Native of, again, my home state of Kentucky. Still my white whale. I want to have Ricky Skaggs on this program talk about his faith, how it impacts his music. 1969, after a party on Chappaquiddick Island, Senator Ted Kennedy from Massachusetts drives his car off a bridge. His passenger, Mary Jo Kopechne, dies. A shadow that would be over his political career and the rest of his days. 1984 on this day, so 32 years ago, the McDonald's massacre in San Ysidro, California, in a fast food restaurant, James Oliver Huberty opens fire, killing 21 people and injuring 19 others before being shot dead by police. I remember that. Who would know it would be the first of these prominent bloodbaths in our country. I can still remember that one well. And then on this day 30 years ago, Greg Norman won one of his two British Open championships, winning the claret jug at Turnberry. So Greg Norman, a guy who, for all of his talent, still won two majors, but not the career he had hoped for. Wonder if Sergio Garcia is ever going to get himself a major. He was hanging around toward the top there for a while this weekend, but couldn't get it done. Anyway, that's all we've got today. Not a lot of huge things on this day throughout the ages. Maybe you make something happen today, and you'll be on a future show. How about that? One of the things I want to get into when we come back from the break, of course, the Cleveland Republican National Convention beginning today, and be, of course, several speakers, and then Donald Trump and Mike Pence, the occupiers of the Republican ticket. And when we come back for the break, I want to talk about the atmosphere right now in this country. As I said yesterday, a tragedy in Baton Rouge. A gunman takes out three law enforcement officials. If you recall, Baton Rouge under great tension after the death of Alton Sterling a couple of weeks ago. And of course, we had the incident in Dallas. But now in Baton Rouge, we have a gunman who apparently drove down from Missouri and shot three law enforcement officials and killed them. It is a tense time in our country. And as one columnist argues, and actually a somewhat regular guest on this program argues, it could be setting up in Donald Trump's favor. So we'll be back in a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
15 minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Monday the 18th. As I said, on this day 40 years ago, back in 1976, Nadia Comaneci receiving the first of her seven perfect tens in that Olympics. The first Olympic athlete gymnast ever to get a 10. And I remember very well. She was 14 years old. I guess I was 10. That was the first Olympics that I remember watching. Interestingly enough, when Omega SA, who was the traditional Olympics scoreboard manufacturer, was asked before the 1976 games whether four digits would be necessary for gymnastics, it was told that a perfect 10.00 was not possible. So when Nadia had her first perfect mark, it was displayed as a 1.00 instead. The crowd was at first confused, but soon understood and gave her a rousing ovation. Over the course of the Olympics, she would earn six additional tens, including en route to capturing the all-around beam and bars titles, and a bronze medal on the floor exercise. Was the first Romanian gymnast to win the Olympic all-around title. She kind of took over the role of gymnastics darling after Olga Korbut, I guess, back in Olympics before that. And of course, I think U.S. fans particularly have always been fascinated. You had your Mary Lou Retton. You had Carrie Strug on the injured ankle, nailing the vault. There have been others, of course, but would love to hear from you. Who's your favorite summer Olympian ever? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can chime in, email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. As I said, you know, the events of this world, what seems like the constant instability continued over the weekend. You had the situation in Turkey, of course, with an attempted and failed coup, which may lead to a greater crackdown there by the Turkish president, and perhaps even a more distant relationship between Turkey and the European Union. That's what some people are speculating, which is not good because Turkey is in a very strategic place, of course, and as that link in many ways between East and West, and a resurgent Russia on the one side, and of course you've got there, they share borders with Iraq and with Syria. And oftentimes migrants into the EU states come through Turkey. So you had that situation. And then you had the shooting yesterday here domestically of three law enforcement officials. And this from theatlantic.com. Three officers are dead. At least three others are wounded after a gunman opened fire Sunday in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. State law enforcement officials confirmed. Baton Rouge, of course, the place where one of the two very controversial police shootings of black men took place, Alton Sterling dying of a gunshot wound there in Baton Rouge. There have been many protests since then. According to The Atlantic, details about the shooting, which took place at a convenience store, are still scarce, but one suspect is dead, state officials say. Louisiana State Police Superintendent Mike Edmondson said they believe he was the man who shot and killed the officers, and he added they believe there's no other shooter held up in the Baton Rouge area. President Obama offered his condolences for the officers and said attacks on public servants have to stop. It just seems that we just continue this bounce back of evil that's so troubling. And particularly as people gather in Cleveland for the Republican National Convention, where there's already a great deal of controversy about the candidacy of Donald J. Trump. And now you have law enforcement officials in Cleveland who are lobbying the governor to suspend the open carry laws in Ohio so that there won't be protesters who are carrying weapons outside the Quicken Loans Arena there in Cleveland. And the governor, John Kasich, saying he does not have the authority as governor to do that. So really need to pray that cooler heads prevail, because there will be protests outside the Republican National Convention. There is a great volatility right now between the law enforcement community and those who are not only frustrated by what they see as Donald Trump's racial bigotry, but they also, therefore, are angry and protesting. And all it takes is one person to decide they want to take matters into their own hands, that things can become very ugly. Now, interestingly enough, our friend Timothy Stanley, who writes for the Daily Telegraph in Great Britain, he is in Cleveland for the Republican National Convention. I was would love to get him on the program. I don't know if that's going to be worked out or not. I think it's always helpful to see a perspective outside the U.S. on our political system. And Timothy Stanley, very astute observer, but he had an article from the Telegraph this past Saturday. The Nice terror attack, this was when the most recent news was the truck attack there on Bastille Day in Nice. So much has even happened since then, which is a sign of what exactly we're dealing with these days. He said the Nice terror attack is why Donald Trump might win. You know, I was thinking about that myself before this piece came out. I hate to think about it in these terms, but politically in this election year, everything seems to come back to that here in the U.S. Situations like the Nice terror attack, the Orlando shooting, what took place in Dallas, and so forth. Who does that help in a political race? Does it help Donald Trump? Does it help Hillary Clinton? Well, Timothy Stanley seems to be of the opinion that perhaps it helps Donald Trump. As he says, the world has to come to terms with the fact that Donald Trump might win the presidential election. The world also has to take its share of blame. Images of terrorism in Nice confirm Trump's narrative that the West has lost its way and new management is needed. He is the law and order candidate in a time of grave disorder. As Stanley writes, his poll numbers aren't too shabby either. At the beginning of the summer, Hillary Clinton enjoyed a double-digit lead that has now shrunk to just 1 or 2 points. And along with that, I noticed on 538.com, which is a website I go to often that looks at things through a statistical lens, according to 538.com, Donald Trump has significantly improved his position in general election forecasts as a result of state and national polls that showed declining numbers for Hillary Clinton. Trump now has a 36% chance of winning the election. I think it was at 19% just a few weeks ago. And so Hillary Clinton's still ahead, as they say in 538, probably still ahead of Trump right now. Doesn't mean she's assured of winning an election held today, let alone one in November, but polls only have her ahead of Trump by 3.4 percentage points nationally, similar to the margins by which Barack Obama beat Mitt Romney in 2012. But anyway, back to Tim Stanley's argument. He said, fascination with Trump, his growing appeal among the white working class, has elevated him in states that Democrats have won in the past, such as Indiana, Maine, and Ohio. Every cloud over Trump comes with a silver lining. Insulting one ethnic group causes a bounce among another. It's a kind of right-wing yin and yang. And he posts here a tweet, I guess, that the Donald had on July 14th. We have to say this. No one has used social media anywhere nearly to the degree that Donald J. Trump has in this campaign. This tweet, another horrific attack, this time in Nice, France, many dead and injured. When will we learn? It is only getting worse. As Stanley writes, Trump knows that his best shot of winning is to be Trump. If at this stage he was too moderate, or he was to moderate and become, as he once threatened, so presidential you'll be bored, then it would come across as a loss of nerve. He has to make his original pitch work. So next week's nominating convention in Ohio, he says, promises to be unlike any convention ever before. Basically, again, he says Trump is the law and order candidate. Now, he wants to clarify that, Stanley says. Trump is the law and order candidate. I don't mean law and order in the sense of defending the Constitution. Even Mike Pence once observed that Trump's proposed ban on Muslim immigration contradicts that much misread document. But as he said, Democrats aren't too hot constitutionally either. Barack Obama has assassinated U.S. citizens with drone strikes, and Hillary Clinton has lied in office and probably endangered national security. As he says, Trump embodies not legalistic niceties, but rough justice at a time when Western society seems to many voters far too tolerant and weak. So, you know, I think he makes a point. And certainly Trump's going to get a convention bounce, as is always the case. Of course, you figure Secretary Clinton will also receive a convention bounce after the Democratic convention next week. I think this is going to be a very ugly race. And to me right now, I think it's a coin toss on who wins, which, like I said, it, pick your poison. I can't in good conscience vote for either of them. We'll be back with a new hour. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call or text. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you are listening to Breadbox Media.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.